roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday. Excited to be with you for the next hour as we discuss the latest news and results in the sport of mixed martial arts. We'll also have an interview today. Georgie Karakanyan will join us at 12:45 p.m. Eastern, 9:45 a.m. Pacific. So we will discuss the results from UFC on ESPN 28. Glad to see them on the sports leader. Bellator 263, of course, took place on the same night on Showtime. We also have a little bit of news to report from ONE Championship and Cage Warriors, both promotions having cards throughout the weekend as well. There's lots of news to discuss. It looks like Masvidal and Edwards is almost inevitable at this point, especially with last week's news that Usman and Covington looks very, very likely. So you start moving pieces around. So Gilbert Burns is making his move. He's calling out Nate Diaz and willing to put money behind that matchup. Little bet, little side wager. Anderson Silva unveiled his Mount Rushmore. We haven't done a Mount Rushmore conversation in a while. Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler have verbally agreed to fight in November in New York City. By the way, that's the same card that has Covington and Usman. Again, I don't believe T's are crossed and I's are dotted, but it's looking very likely. Can you imagine if they can put Masvidal and Edwards on that one too? Ooh, that'd be nice. Aspen Ladd and Macy Chasson were rebooked. Lots of other news to discuss as we begin our Monday edition of MMA Junkie Radio here on a Monday, August 2nd. Let's get to the results from this past weekend. We'll start with the UFC ESPN 28. The main event had Sean Strickland defeating Uriah Hall via unanimous decision. One judge gave him 50-44. I thought Uriah nicked the round, maybe two. But when I say two, I thought, you know, they were close. They were just close. Judges didn't see it that way. 50-44, 50-45, and a 49-46. Congrats to Sean Strickland. Big win for him. This is a guy that has mixed it up with some of the best in the business. So, you know, that starts to put you towards fighting those contenders, and that's what gets you in a title shot. Doesn't get you a title shot just yet. And for Uriah Hall, the four-fight losing streak comes to an end. And at age 37, it was his birthday on fight night. You know, this could be a long road to getting back to these top-notch signature fights for him. But you never know. Stay healthy, be in the right place at the right time, and you know, you're right back in there. But any thoughts on this main event, Goes?
I was a little shocked that a lot of people I heard say the card was great, but the main event kind of slowed things down. I actually kind of enjoyed the main event. I thought it was a good fight. I thought it was solid. The fact that Uriah Hall is so explosive, he's just that type of fighter that you can't count out until the very, very end. And he had these like moments where you could see he was battling himself and his coaches. If you don't believe it by just reading his expressions, listen to what his coaches are saying. I think they could tell that something like that was happening too. And so it's kind of that thing that we always talk about, right? When a fighter's starting to break, I think we were watching that. But I think we were watching him break and then kind of come back and then break and come back. So to me, it was sort of an interesting fight. And physically, you just can't count Uriah Hall out. So I was intrigued until the very end. I thought it was a good fight.
Yeah, I agree. You definitely can't count him out because he's had a few comebacks before, or at least he's competed to the bitter end on fights that he's dropped. But a lot of people that I've talked to say he can be a little bit of a front runner where he's really damn good if he's in control and he's put it on you. But the moment he faces adversity, sometimes the comeback road just isn't there for him. I don't know if I would agree with that. I'd have to literally get a volume of Hall's maybe top five fights and just go back and look at it. Now, I will say he was getting touched up early and Strickland was putting on some pressure. And then he started wiping away at an eye and just looking uncomfortable. But, you know, I thought he was maybe telling the other guy, hey, look, I'm going to take your best shot. You're going to expend a lot of energy. Can you keep up for five rounds, son? You know, I don't know. But Hall, the first 30 to 90 seconds of every round when he came out, with the exception of maybe the first, he looked, you know, like a fighter that could win the fight. He would come out and just start, boom, throwing a nice jab out there, throwing some fast twitch punches that were landing. And you could look on Strickland's face and go, wow, he's not liking that. He's starting to retreat. Uriah's finding a groove. But then Sean Strickland would come back and, you know, put it on Uriah. And more of those 5 minutes were what I just said towards the end there of Strickland finding a way to come back and just get more off on Uriah. So Uriah did keep himself in the fight by having those moments. And again, I isolated them as the beginning of every round. Sometimes he would come back, you know, in certain parts of the round. I don't want you to think that it was split in the middle. Oh, after 90 seconds, it was the other guy. No, I mean, they went back and forth, but I'm talking about like the general feel of the fight. So I enjoyed it. It was good. Good for both guys, especially Strickland, because Strickland is 30, you know, and he is kind of on this run of, you know, the comeback trail from that serious motorcycle injury that he had. And now he can say, hey, look, I've beaten Uriah Hall. Who's next? Give me a top-notch name, and people have to listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. That was a really good performance for Sean Strickland. The whole card, like, really when you think about storylines and stuff, you know, they really pushed what had happened to Strickland. And it's amazing, you know, that he was able to come back. There have been a couple fighters that have been able to do things like that, coming back from really, really bad injuries. When you think of motorcycles, I mean, you think of Frank Mir. But for him to be able to come back, push the way he did, and look as good as he did, that's pretty impressive. And then, you know, post-fight, he had some kind of strange things to say. But I think if you look at his skills, I think you can match him up with just about anybody and know that he's going to give you one hell of a fight.
I did notice Paul Felder like, okay, thank you. That's Sean Strickland, everybody, you know. We're calling it a night here, but for those that didn't catch it, he says, I think he'd be in, I don't know if he said Idaho, Montana, or just isolated up north somewhere in a trailer cooking meth. But he said stuff like that. That's out there, you know, and I'm glad that at least he's kind of coming to grips and admitting that, hey, there's a, you know, a little bit of a screw loose, and hopefully with him now competing, getting past that injury, seeing that he's one of the best in the world, you know, he can turn that part around. And if it's just dark humor that he's into, okay, you know, that's you, man. But if that's really, really him, whoo, you know, I would hope that whoever's, you know, guiding him also can pull him aside and go, hey, look, you know, let's really focus on what you got and a lot of other people don't have, and that's the ability to make a living here, and, you know, you're one of the best, and, you know, meet yourself a girl, or I don't know, maybe he's got a lady, who knows, but it does just sound like some guy that only thinks, eats, breathes fighting, violence of any kind at this moment. So we got to just focus that guy.
Do you think he can be bigger than he is now? Like, where do you think the ceiling is for a guy like this?
He said himself he hits like a pansy, but he's got that volume type of attack that's really, really nice. He also secured some takedowns against Hall. Never really did much in terms of keeping him there. Hall would always find a way to get up. But I would say keep rounding out your game, you know, and because you're going to need it against the top guys. The top guys can kind of do it all, you know. Yeah, I know Israel Adesanya had trouble getting up when he got taken down by Blachowicz, you know. But I bet you he's been working on it, you know. So I would say that he can probably be a top 10 guy for the next 3 years. I don't know if he can win a title because the road to the title goes through Whitaker and Adesanya, and they're pretty damn tough, you know. Plus, you got to get by those guys like Derek Brunson. Derek Brunson's a good example of what I was saying about Uriah Hall. I think he's 37, and I think he's on 4 or 5 in a row. So you can turn it around. It's not like, you know, close the book on Hall. I'm just saying the likelihood, at least when we've been covering the sport and the history of the sport, tells us it is tough at that age. But has it been done? Of course. You know, you can be a contender. So, yeah, you got to get through Brunson, Whitaker, Adesanya. We'll see, man. So far, so good. I hope that he can maybe some more calf kicks. Maybe a little bit more to when you get the takedown, maybe secure the takedown and see what kind of top game you have, jiu-jitsu-wise or ground and pound. I think that part needs to be tightened up. But, God, he looks like he's in great shape. I mean, he didn't even sit at any of in between any of the rounds, if I'm not mistaken. He didn't even stand still a couple times. He just paced back and forth. A couple coaches were like, hey, you know, do this and do that. And, yeah, I got this. So maybe even that part I think would be nice for him to – you know, you're going to need that in the big fights for the coach to say, look, listen, this is what I've spotted. I mean, I think our path to victory gets a little bit easier if you do this, that we worked on it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I know Eric Nixick isn't his head coach, but he's the head coach at Extreme Couture, where you see Sean Strickland a lot. You see him at Syndicate as well. But those cardio sessions that they go through where he's Coach Lombardi, man, I think that's I think you point at a guy like Sean Strickland and go, you see, this is the payoff here. Because he just would – if I was Uriah Hall, man, I'd be losing my mind. That dude just did not stop. Like, maybe his punches weren't the hardest punches in the world, but they were consistent, and they just wouldn't stop coming.
I think if he just throws straighter punches and he puts himself always in a good position to, you know, turn his hip, turn his foot, and just deliver the blow the way it's supposed to deliver and just work on those mechanics, he can get there. Cheyenne Bays, who I want to transition to, she, as an amateur, I didn't remember her as a hard hitter, and she's turned into a pretty hard hitter, hard puncher, hard kicker. She's just become more explosive. I think you can become more athletic, and that comes through the modern strength and conditioning that is out there. So, I don't know. I think Strickland can get better. Cheyenne Bays looked great, defeating Gloria DePaula in the co-main event. Guys, they went from like 14 fights to 9 by the time it was fight night. They were the co-main event. She won $50,000. Nice kick to the dome, followed up by some punches. And that was a wrap. So good on Cheyenne Bays. She also secured herself $50,000 for that effort. She said, my bank account's negative, man. I've been broken this sport. She seemed very sincere as she said it, but she didn't give up on her dream. And now she's got her win, her show, and 50 G's to hopefully get her out of that negative and give her a little bit of cushion, you know, before her next fight. And I know she's only 6-2. But I really think that, you know, maybe in 2 years we could be talking about her facing, you know, getting ready to face the Roses of the world or whatever. She's going to have to get through the Mackenzie Dearns and Pollyanna Viannas. And so it's still a ways. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I think she can get to those fights and maybe win them. And I don't know if Rose will still be around or who will still be around, but, you know, there's this fearsome threesome of Rose, Zhang Weili, and Joanna. Joanna, I think, doesn't have too much longer. The sport doesn't appear. You know, Tatiana Suarez looks like she's going to move up to 125 if and when she comes back. So you got to get through another group of girls too. But, you know, she's only 1-1 in the UFC since coming through the Dana White Contender Series. So I'll tap the brakes right there.
Well, all you got to do is you got to keep showing improvement from fight to fight, right? And the last fight, she just didn't really have an opportunity to show what she could do. And this one, boom, there's your improvement. And I promise you, you're probably going to see it from her because she does not stop in the gym. She's nonstop, and she's a really tough fighter and a smart fighter, I think. So I think she's going to continue to improve, and I think you're right. I think she will be mentioned with those names pretty soon.
Jared Gooden defeated Nicholas Stolze. Nice KO punch there within a minute of the fight beginning. Melsik Bagdasarian defeated Colin Anglin. TKO finish there. Head kick followed up with some punches. Jason Witt defeated Vinny Barbarino, a.k.a. Brian Barbarina. Majority decision there. They had a 28-28 and then two 29-28s. Good win for Witt. Great fight that went to the end, and I'm glad they got 50K for it. I thought Barbarino was on the verge of finishing Jason Witt, but Witt would either rally to get a takedown or just ram his head through Barbarina's chest to close the distance, and Barbarina just was looking for that space to throw those punches because homeboy was – he was rocked, you know, but he was just a big, tough, muscular dude that he had a great chin and, you know, he was tough, man. He just didn't get finished, so he barely hung on, but they shared the 50 grand. So I've given you three of the bonuses. Let me give you the last one. Melsik Bagdasarian got it for that TKO head kick and punches that I mentioned as well. Chris Grootsmacher, defeated Rafa Garcia. Kai Kamaka drew with Danny Chavez, 228-28 there, and a 29-27. He would have won if not for a kick to the nuts. I think the kick to the nuts came because just prior to that, there was a very vicious eye poke. And I think Herb Dean was like, man, that's two serious fouls, you know. I think individually, if he had had only one and knocked the other, I think he would have got that warning, you know, the stern one. Because it was a pretty good kick to the nuts. And it was a pretty good eye poke. I think it was a knee to the nuts, right? I can't remember. But
yeah, it grazed on the way up. Yeah. But he took so long and doing it that I was like, is he going to get it? Is he not? Like, it was pretty brutal. But, yeah, that there were a lot of fouls there.
So that cost him his W there, Kai Kamaka. And he had taken that fight on short notice. So there was the thought, well, can he, can he last the three rounds or not? Man, he's had a rough run. He got finished by Jonathan Pierce, and then he had that split decision fight against TJ Brown, which everybody thought was close, and a lot of people thought Kamaka won. And now this draw, that's no win, no bonus of any kind, and just your show money, you know, so that kind of sucks. Jin Yu Fry defeated Ashley Yoder. This may be it for Ashley Yoder, although she did take the fight on late notice. 30-27s across the board. Zaruk Adishev defeated Ryan Benoit. I don't know if you saw Ryan's leg, man. It's broken in the fibula, I believe. And he posted it, or I saw it there on Junkie. 230-27s and a 29-28. Sucks because Benoit has these heavy hands for the flyweight division. And he was hunting him, but he was hunting him with one leg and in a switch stance. But, you know, he got to that position by Adeshev's technique of the leg kick, the calf kick. So it was a really, really interesting little chess match there at the beginning of the afternoon. I enjoyed the fight. I hope that's not Ryan Benoit's last fight in the UFC. Benoit's just had so much time off, so many injuries. I kind of like the guy, man. I remember watching him fight at MFC, but now that's three in a row. Four of the last five have been losses. So no one finishes him, but I don't know. I just hope he gets one more chance. And the last fight was the first one that kicked off the night was Phil Rowe versus Orion Cosi. Phil Rowe defeated him TKO stoppage in the second round. Sorry, Goz, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think Ryan gets another shot just because of how much guts he showed in this last one. I mean, if you look at the leg, the way it looks today, the very, like, right underneath the knee is just completely swollen and red and beat up. So I think he would get another one. Just like you said, he hasn't been finished. He is a tough fighter. Just had a lot of bad luck.
Yeah. Definitely. Look at everything that from the beginning this fight card was created when they assigned it a date and we knew it would be in Vegas because basically anything that's not a pay-per-view has been in Vegas. But once we knew that UFC on ESPN 28 was in works, Jin Yu Fry was supposed to fight Estela Nunes. Nunes withdrew. Munir Lazez was supposed to fight Nicholas Stolze. Lazez had visa issues. Duhu Choi was supposed to fight Danny Chavez. Choi got injured. Kyung Ho Kang was supposed to fight Hani Yaya tested positive on fight day. Juan Camilo Ronderos versus Zaruk Adishev. Ronderos withdrew. That's where Benoit stepped in. Askar Askarov was supposed to fight Alex Perez. I forgot about that. Askarov got hurt. Askarov's up there, too, in terms of who might fight Brandon Moreno if they don't run Brandon and Fig Part 3. Nico Montano had a horrible weight cut. She came within 7 pounds, said she gave it her all, but wasn't good enough. That fight was canceled. She was supposed to fight Yanan Wu. Ronnie Lawrence was supposed to fight John Castaneda. Castaneda withdrew. Sam Alvey was supposed to fight Roman Kapalov. Kapalov had visa issues. Trevin Jones was booked to fight Ronnie Lawrence after the Castaneda fight, withdrawal, excuse me. And Lawrence had a botched weight cut, so that was off. Shamil Abdur-Amerikov was supposed to fight Chris Daukaus and Amir Dirikov. That guy, Shamil, he was removed due to COVID. Look at all that, goes. That's almost a whole fight card in itself.
It's crazy, right? That's amazing that a fight card can just get decimated that way. And that's why, like, I feel, you know, somebody else like Ashley Yoder, she might be on the chopping block, but she took a short notice fight, so who knows? Like, I don't know. There's so many of those on this card that I think the UFC just might put on a happy face and reward some of these people for taking short notice fights.
Ashley Yoder used to be better at getting the fight to the ground where she's stronger, and maybe people's takedown defense is just better or they're ready for it. She's not executing that. I'd like to see a little bit more of that. That said, she did hit her with some straight lefts that for a while there, I thought Jin Yufrei was really, really rocked, and she kept hitting her. It just wasn't enough, and there wasn't a diversity of strikes. Like, it wasn't followed up with a leg kick or a dig to the body or a hook, but it was a nice straight left that she put on her, and she had her moment, but it wasn't there. She's lost two in a row and four or five, so we'll see. Sometimes when you do the UFC a solid like that, you stay ready and you compete, then, you know, you stick around, but sometimes the numbers just add up. All right, Goz, any final thoughts here? I want to transfer to Bellator, which took place the same night, and that show was pretty heavy as well in terms of social media and reaction by hardcores. So any final thoughts on UFC on ESPN 28?
It was a fun card. It was really entertaining. They had good fights. But the main event, some people thought it was a little slower. I thought it was pretty damn good. I thought it was good. But when you look at the rival card on the other side that we're about to talk about, what tends to trump things is just there was more on the line, you know, in the main event. And I think that's what kind of captivated an entire audience that night.
Yeah. So let's talk about Bellator 263, which took place at the Forum. 11,000 and change were in attendance. The gate was 1.6 million and change. It was headlined by Patricio Pitbull Frady, as he was fighting AJ McKee. He was actually defending his featherweight title, as well as them two fighting for the featherweight finals, you know, that Grand Prix they've had. 16 men, they were down to two. It was those two. So we had the undisputed belt that was being defended. We had the Grand Prix belt that would be awarded to the winner, and then $1 million as well. So that's why the magnitude of that fight was tremendous. Plus, Patricio Frady, arguably the best fighter Bellator's ever had, or at least one of them, with his two title reigns, two tournament wins, seven title defenses, and the fact that he was a champ going into the fight, you know, that's tremendous. I mean, Pitbull's a stud, you know, and AJ McKee, undefeated. He's a stud. He's just never lost, and he's made things look so easy. You know, every single fight was a finish in the Grand Prix leading into the finals. And in the finals, he finished Pitbull with a choke. He kicked him, then he punched him, and then he went in there and grabbed the guillotine choke standing. Patricio Frady went out, and that was a wrap. He got all that done in 1 minute and 57 seconds goes. So all finishes in the Grand Prix, and he beat a talented fighter to become the world champion there at Bellator.
Yeah, you know, when you watch it live, as soon as it finished, I think you and I kind of looked at each other like, oh, man, is this going to have a little bit of controversy? Because normally when you do when you lift the arm, it just kind of goes completely dead. And in this case, it didn't really do that, but there was a stoppage. If you watch, you can tell he was going out as that was going on. So really there wasn't, and I'm glad that kind of got put out to light there in the press conference a little bit, because I would hate for a fight with so much on the line like that to have any type of controversy. It didn't deserve it. AJ McKee had a great performance. He went in there and he did him, you know, and he caught Pitbull. And that's the thing about AJ McKee, is he's got so many weapons, dude. And the kid is just absolutely amazing. So he goes in there. He's now the tournament champion. He's now got $1 million. He says all the right things after. I mean, that dude is pretty damn amazing, and I think you got to give a lot of props to him, but also to his father. If you listen to his father and the way he talks and the way he's raised that kid and the way he's coached that kid, I don't know that he does that without the guidance of his father, Antonio McKee. I think that's a really big component there.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. He looked so calm when the fight was happening. Everybody kept asking him during the week, are you nervous? Do you feel pressure? And no, not really. You know, I've been there before. I've wrestled in front of many people. This is my hometown. And he had that undefeated record to back him up. You know, the competition kept getting better. AJ McKee's first 10 fights, everybody kept saying, well, you haven't fought the best. Are you for real? You know, and he's for real, folks. Along the way, he defeated some former champions who held some belts, you know, some belts from promotions like Georgie Caracani and Darian Caldwell and now Patricio Pitbull Frady. Mm-hmm. So he's a stud. And again, he just made it look so easy. I think what was scary, Goes, was that McKee had to initiate the end when he was telling the referee Beltran, he's out. And then you see Beltran make his move. And that doesn't quell the people's fears that a fight may be stopped early when one fighter's maybe doing the talking and, you know. But Beltran's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He did see that his hand was limp. Pitbull didn't collapse like Machida did when John Jones choked him out standing. So, of course, you look at that and you go, what, was he out? Look, he's right there. He had this look where his eyes were open. But it didn't look like he was all together there. It looked like he was someone who was about to go out and was able to still, you know, remain standing. He was very classy in defeat. They both bowed and got on their knees and hugged. And remember, what, 48 hours before, they had to be separated at the press conference. The last time you and I did a show was last Thursday, and we were like, hey, what's going on here, man? These Pitbull brothers, they're always full of piss and vinegar, but things have been calm, which is cool. But I wonder if anything will kick off in the next 48 hours. And sure enough, within a few hours, they were going at it. They had to end that press conference prematurely. I don't even think they faced off that day. But then after all that, they were pretty classy. They faced off at the weigh-ins and, again, you know, hugged it out when the fight was over. And now Pitbull just said, I'm going to come back stronger. His coach, Eric Albarracin, Capitan das Americas, is saying, hey, let's do it in Brazil. And I don't mind him pitching that. But Bellator's never been to Brazil. And they do travel. They have plans to go to London and Russia. So it is kind of surprising that they haven't gone to Brazil. They've had some Brazilian champions. They have Brazilian champions, not just in the past, but currently. Hell, he's one of them. So could they go? I don't know. So that's where you have to ask Coker, why haven't you? You know, does it boil down to a TV contract or what's the deal? I mean, they are anywhere from 3 to 6 hours ahead. So it's feasible. That can be done. At worst case scenario, you might have a main event that starts at 2 or 3 a.m., but as someone that's been to Rio de Janeiro, that's perfect. You know, that's about the time things get rolling over there. So anyway, Georgie Caracanian just texted me. Did he pop in here for a second or not yet?
No.
He wrote, my bad. And then let me just see what he's saying. I want to make sure I don't goof that up. But anyway, I don't think it's going to happen you know, in time for the rematch, because we're in the middle of a pandemic that's kicking up again. Mm-hmm. Brazil is a country that's gotten hit just as hard as us. So we'll see. Now, do I want to see the rematch right away? I don't know. You got to give respect to that title run. And the first thing I look at when you talk about rematches is, was there controversy? Do we need to see it right away? Was it a barn burner, a classic? Did the guy have an amazing title run? Is that some respect we got to give him? You know, and it wasn't a barn burner. We do have to give him some respect, but he's also the lightweight champion. I'd like to see Pitbull maybe do that and address that. And in the meantime, maybe McKee can take a title challenger. And then after that, we can build towards it. Maybe by then, maybe in 1 year, they do go to Brazil. Who knows? Mm-hmm. To me, it doesn't look like McKee would have a problem fighting anywhere in the world.
No, but you got AJ McKee. He's got a big skin of Pitbull up on his wall. But where does that put him now in the world, George, when we talk about all featherweights?
You want to go there right now, huh? All right. He's number one, Goes. AJ McKee's the number one featherweight in the world. I had to split hairs. I had to split the atom at one point. But I really, really dove into this past weekend. AJ McKee has the record to back it up. He's undefeated. And of course, this is AJ McKee versus Alexander Volkanovski that we're talking about, who's the number one right now in the USA Today Sports MMA Junkie rankings. Volkanovski hasn't been as active in the past year, part of it due to the pandemic. It struck him hard. He's coming off three wins where he's won by decision. And remember, AJ McKee's finishing everybody in this Grand Prix. And then the level of competition isn't too far off either. Like, McKee and Pitbull are actually in our rankings currently right now. So it's not like they came out of nowhere. They did it, and they did it. They took the long way because the long road because they just don't have the opposition that pushes them towards the top. But when one guy beats the other and he's as impressive as he has been, and you're undefeated like that, and you make it look that easy, you got to take a serious look. I took a serious look, Goz, and I think he's the number one featherweight in the world. Barely, just barely. But I thought Holloway beat Volkanovski in the last fight. Again, Volkanovski's has had three decisions. AJ McKee's just smoking people. And you could almost argue that Volkanovski's fight versus Ortega, that win may not be as impressive as what McKee did to Frady, if he can beat him. Now, the fight is yet to occur. It was supposed to, but it hasn't happened yet. But I don't know, man. There was a lot to take in. Pitbull's a two-time champion. He is a two-time tournament winner with seven title defenses, who also happened to be a champ going into the fight. It's no joke to beat a guy that fast. That's an impressive win.
Yeah, I mean, he's beating people, but he's leaving nothing to the imagination. You know, he's finishing people. He's finishing them in different ways. That's the scary thing right there. But I'm going to need one more, I think, one more to say he's that guy. But I do feel like if you were to fight Volkanovski today, I think I would pick him over Volkanovski. But I wouldn't pick him over Max Holloway just yet, if that makes any sense to you.
It does, because sometimes it boils down to the matchup. I think he would be favored over Volkanovski, and I think he would beat Volkanovski. The way Max Holloway fought in his last fight, that one would be tougher because the length will be matched and lots of experience there, you know, and he will be definitely tested on the feet. I'd love to see that. It's too bad these two promotions don't, from time to time, do what the UFC did with Pride and what, you know, Invicta's done with the UFC or with Strikeforce, sharing the talent, or Strikeforce with Dream and Bellator with Ryzen. You know, it's happened. It's happened from time to time. But these promotions, I don't know that we're going to see that. So all we can do is speculate and talk about it. Anyway, the rest of the card went as follows on Saturday night. Bellator 263. Mads Burnell defeated Emmanuel Sanchez. Usman Nurmagomedov defeated Manny Muro. Islam Mamedov defeated Brett Primus. So Nurmagomedov and Mamedov are really two lightweights to look out for. And I've been complaining that Bellator needs to shore up their lightweight division. They may not have those household names that we're used to hearing, but keep an eye on these two. Goichi Yamaguchi, who didn't make weight, unfortunately, he also defeated Chris Gonzalez. You could throw him in the mix. You got Pitbull. You got Benson Henderson. You got Miles Jury. You know, you figure it out, Bellator. I don't know if you have enough to do a Grand Prix just yet, but let's start focusing on that lightweight division. Vanessa Porto defeated Ilara Joanne. Gadzi Rabadanov defeated Daniel Carey. Kasan Magomed Sharipov defeated Jonathan Kiros. Joshua Jones defeated Johnny Cisneros. Georgi Karakanyan, who will join us in 15 minutes, defeated Kiefer Crosby. And Brian Moore defeated Jordan Winski. Now, there are no bonuses to report, but I do have some of the payouts. You want to hear them, Goose?
Yeah.
Patricio Frady made $250,000. So it was $250 to show. No win bonus. He would have won $1 million if he won, but he lost. AJ McKee had $150,000 to show, plus the $1 million. So he took $1,150,000 home. Mads Burnell, 26-26. Emmanuel Sanchez got 61. Manny Muro got 26. He managed to negotiate it as all of it up front. Usman Nurmagomedov. Oh, sorry, he was the loser of the fight, so he just got his 26. I believe that's what he negotiated, was just 26 to show, and that was it. Usman Nurmagomedov, however, got 30-30. Islam Mamedov got 10-10. Brett Primus got 50,000 goes just to show. Now, he's been with them for a while, and he does lightweight and welterweight, So that might be just Coker saying, hey, look, you've been with us for a while. You get all 50 up front. That's not a bad payday. Chris Gonzalez, 31,000. He was the loser in this fight. Goichi Yamaguchi got 32 and 32. Let me just jump to some other names here. Vanessa Porto, she's been in the sport for a while, 15 and 15. She was a winner by split decision. Georgie Karakanyan goes, got all 70,000 up front. There is no win bonus. It's just 70,000, win or lose. His opponent, Kiefer Crosby, who I had never heard of until this fight, he got 50,000 just to show. So that SBG group must really, really be some pretty good negotiators, you know, because he was talking up a big game. He sounded like McGregor at times when I was listening to some of his interviews. That's kind of what caught my attention. I mean, I'll back Georgie and watch any of his fights. Been doing that for a long time. But I really didn't know Kiefer Crosby. And then once Kiefer Crosby started talking about, I was like, oh, shit, we got a fight here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. That was fun to watch them. It was fun to see Georgie just keep his cool. Georgie seems like – Georgie is the nicest guy. But he does seem like someone who, if he hits red, look out.
Oh, yeah. Hey, he's admitted as much. He's told us stories about it. But, yeah, when that's not going on, he's like a sweetheart, dude. He's super funny. He's fun. He likes a lot of stuff that a lot of us like, music and stuff like that. So pretty normal dude. But you're right. Like, you'd be surprised that he was being pushed in that way and just didn't react. And maybe that is just being a veteran now, you know?
Yeah. All right. So we'll have Georgie in a few minutes here. I do want to talk a few things. Ong Lasong, who was a champ over at ONE Championship, back in the win column. He wins. Victoria Lee, 16 years of age, part of the Fighting Lee family and from Hawaii. She wins. So 2-0 as a 16-year-old. Pretty amazing. And then on Sunday, Cage Warriors, we had Max Roshkoff come up with a W via TKO stoppage. Jason Herzog called the fight after unanswered punches. And now Max Roshkoff has kind of like exercised a little bit of the demons, career demons. You know, this he had that fight in the UFC where he quit on the stool and he got cut. You know, that was it. That was his one and only chance. In fact, he thought that was it for his career. He just didn't think he had it. And we started seeing him back at Extreme Couture a few months ago. I thought he was just training. I thought he was just maybe getting ready. I didn't know that there was a fight coming up until this week. And I noticed he was on the Cage Warriors list when we talked to Graham Boylan, the president of Cage Warriors. I was like, oh, cool. But let's see what happens here. That's hard. That's difficult to overcome in your career, regardless of the level. But he went out there and got the job done. Eric Nixick was in his corner. So congrats to Max and Eric. Eric was also in Cheyenne Bay's corner, too. Hell, he would have been 3-0 with Kai Kamaka if that foul hadn't happened. You saw the scores, so.
I think overall, they might have had like 7 fighters going this weekend, and they had 6 wins and 1 draw. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, for sure. So congratulations to them. Let's focus on some of the other news that's out there. It appears that Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler have agreed verbally to face each other at UFC 268, I believe. It's like November 6th. It's in New York. And I don't think it'll be the main event, but it'll probably be one hell of a co-main event. And I don't know if we're going to see 3 rounds or 5 rounds. It's not unusual now for the UFC to go, well, it's not a headliner and it's not a title fight, but they're doing 5 rounds. So might that happen? I don't know. But, man, that's the type of matchup I live for right there.
Yeah, I almost – 5 rounds would be great, but I almost want it to be 3 just because of I don't want them to leave anything on the table. Like, I feel like that fight is just going to be an explosion. It's your almost like your Hagler Burns type of fight, of matchup. I really never thought that fight was going to come to fruition. If I'm the UFC, like, I wish I could ask them what they're thinking. I get it makes sense, but the way they run their business, it shocks me that they would match these two guys up against each other.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're both former champions from other leagues that were highly thought of. They were ranked, and now they've come over, and they got skins on their wall to prove they belong in the UFC and that they should be fighting. Well, Gaethje's now been here for a while, But Chandler just started his run over here, and he defeated Dan Hooker very impressively. And then he had Charles Oliveira on the ropes, almost became champ before Oliveira came back and won. But he's also got the Alvarez win. Win and loss, to be fair, Alvarez did also win a fight in their one-on-one series. So we know Chandler and Gaethje are two of the best. 5 years ago, we wouldn't have thought they would have fought. Hell, I think 5 years ago it would have been easier to think they might fight, because we would have thought that maybe Bellator and WSOF could come to an agreement. But now they're both in the UFC and it's verbally agreed to, so I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think early on, it's just so hard because you can't stand in front of Justin Gaethje and just exchange shots like that. I wouldn't recommend that for Michael Chandler. He's definitely going to have to use his wrestling, but you know, Gaethje's takedown defense is pretty damn good. And if he gets those leg kicks going off, which Michael Chandler has been a little susceptible to in the past, early on, I might be leaning more towards Gaethje.
Mm-hmm. Them leg kicks, man, they're brutal. You know, that going back to Benoit, it was his fibular head that was broken. I still got to dig in to see what the hell a fibular head is. I know the tibia and the fibula. So
just much the top like of it.
Top of the fibular head, but there was so much concern at the hospital that he might have compartment syndrome that they kept him overnight. So yeah, man, those leg kicks are no joke. Michael Chandler has been on the receiving end of those leg kicks, and Justin Gaethje has ended fights with leg kicks. So that definitely will get talked about for the next 3 months leading up until their fight. But Chandler's power, and plus that was only one fight that this happened, folks, with Michael Chandler. But I do want to say that Chandler's power and his improved striking is, you know, I know Justin Gaethje's got a chin and he's tough as nails, but he also needs to look out for Chandler's power, man. He's got power in both hands now.
Mm-hmm.
So continuing on here, Gilbert Burns wants to fight Nate Diaz and he wants to bet him $200K. Now, Diaz is coming off the loss to Leon Edwards. Gilbert Burns is coming off the win over Stephen Thompson. So why would a guy that's coming off a win that wants to get back to the title fight a guy coming off a loss? Because he's Nate Diaz. He's an uber superstar. And I think no matter what, it lifts your profile, even if you're catching him off an L. So I like his strategy. He knows that Usman's busy with Covington, and he knows there's other guys, other contenders out there, primarily Leon Edwards. If he were to either beat Masvidal, if he fights Masvidal, or just stay ready for the winner of Covington versus Usman. So I think Gilbert Burns is just looking for ways to stay relevant, have some fun, but he's willing to bet $200K goes against Nate Diaz.
I like it. I just don't see it happening. To me, Nate Diaz, I don't know that he's the guy that would want to just turn things around and fight right away. He seems like both him and his brother to me seem like guys that make money and then want to spend money. Like it goes in that order. And then when money starts to go away, let's make more money so we can spend more money. So I think that's kind of like the mindset that guy's in. I don't know that he's like other fighters where they just want to keep fighting. They want to keep doing that. I don't see it happening. But I could see why Gilbert would stress to have that fight. It makes a lot of sense. But I don't see it happening.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll see. But I like that he lobbed it out there, and there was a lot of traffic behind it and a lot of pop on social media. So you never know. The UFC is always watching, monitoring, and if it makes sense, they'll do it. Bellator. Let's switch back to Bellator. Again, these two promotions went head-to-head, man. It was a fun night. I had both TVs on. And here's some news outside of both events. That's the Bellator Light Heavyweight Grand Prix. It's going to resume in the fall. They got a date. It's October 16th. The fights are taking place in Phoenix, Arizona. Both Nemkov versus Anthony Johnson and Corey Anderson versus Ryan Bader. Nemkov will be defending his light heavyweight belt against Anthony Johnson. Both fights will go 5 rounds, and the two winners will obviously face off in the winter. Same situation as Frady versus McKee. If it's the champ, Nemkov, that advances, or whoever advances, because if Johnson wins, he's champ, the belt will be on the line, the Grand Prix will be on the line, and $1 million will be on the line. So we have a date, goes. It's not that far away, October 16th, 2.5 months.
That's, I know Bader moved, but that's sort of a home game for him, right? He spent a lot of time out there. Those are two good matchups, dude. Really, really good. I love these tournaments, man. Sometimes you kind of forget about them a little bit, and then they come back. But I think they're both really, really interesting matchups, and I think it's going to make for a really good final no matter. I mean, you can kind of just pick at any of them, and you'll end up with a pretty decent final.
The United States, we love tournaments. We love March Madness. We love the NFL playoffs. You know, we love them brackets. I wish the UFC would embrace it. In a way, their matchmaking is unofficial brackets, you know, that it's just they have the convenience to plug and play, and when something's hot, they will do that. But, boy, I think if the UFC would just try it, you know. You don't know until you try it. Dana White said, no, there won't be any women in MMA. Ronda Rousey comes along and says, let's try it. He says, okay, next thing you know, we got tons of female fights in the UFC. This is something he was dead set against. Remember when the lightweights went away?
Mm-hmm.
The lightweights. I mean, the lightweights is the marquee division right now probably for the UFC. And they went away at one point, you know. So they came back and, you know, he made decisions there. Just try a ramp instead of walking through the arena. Just try pyrotechnics. Just do it under the premise of, you know, we bought Pride, so we bought their business model and their ideas, and we just want to have a Pride-style show. We'll fly in some Pride fighters. We'll, you know, honor them in some way, and, you know, we'll have the fighters wear Pride. Just try it, and if it works, what do you know? Just try 165 and 175. You know, and if it works, what do you know? But seriously, man, I don't know. I just think try a Grand Prix. I remember people got excited when it was Yuri Shatani. I forget what the guy's name was. Benavidez, McCall, and Demetrius. It was only a four-man, but I remember we were like, oh, that's cool, when mm-hmm. they introduced it. The strawweight division got introduced via the reality show. You know, that's not real prize fighting, but they tried it. So just try a Grand Prix, UFC. I'm telling you, I don't think it would suck. You may come out of it and go, well, we tried it, but I didn't like it. But you're not going to go, we tried it and it sucked.
I
think it'd be dope.
I actually thought about it this weekend, yesterday, when we were watching the soccer game at Allegiant Stadium. I thought, how cool would it be to have a ramp coming down and that as your backdrop? Because in Allegiant Stadium, there's like a big hole where you can actually see the strip. Can you imagine having that as your background, having fighters come out walking underneath that? Dude, that'd be so dope.
I know. And now they have the stadium, and they have the massive arena. So think about it. I think they should think about it. All right, we'll put that topic to the side. When we come back in 10 seconds, we will be talking to Bellator lightweight Georgie Karakanyan, 3-1 since he moved to 155, coming off a big win over Kiefer Crosby. We're excited to talk to him. We've talked to him many times over the years, so this will be a nice catch-up with old Georgie boy in Southern California.
What's up, guys?
There he is, Georgie Karakanyan, former WSOF featherweight champion, current Bellator lightweight. What's going on, brother? How are you?
How's guys? How you guys doing? So I got a little, it doesn't sound like me because I think I screamed too much.
Your fans were screaming on Saturday night, man. That was awesome. You went out there and did some work. You're 3-1 as a lightweight. You've been fighting for a long time, over 40 fights in your career. You have not slowed down. You continue to improve. Nice arm triangle submission there over Kiefer Crosby, a guy who definitely looked bigger than you, definitely younger than you. But you got it done.
Yeah. Like you said, you know, he was bigger than me. I think stronger, way stronger than me. But I got to use my, you know, all the experience I had and all the fights I had in the past. I got to use that. And like you said, I think at 55, I feel great. And, you know, I'm glad I got the win, you know, especially the submission.
You know what else came into play, Georgie? Experience. And Kiefer Crosby was telling you experience wasn't going to get it done on Saturday. I couldn't believe how composed you stayed during the face-off. You're a professional fighter. We've covered you for a long time. But the one thing I know, I was telling Goz this earlier, I go, nicest guy in the world. But I swear to God, I think if you really piss him off, man, that guy's going to hit red. And, you know, I couldn't believe you restrained yourself. You did have your hands behind your back, so maybe that helped. Maybe you were just in the frame of mind of like, hey, I'm past this. But it looked like he was poking.
Yeah, yeah, he was poking all week, which was good. You know, it was really good. But if you would have said something to my family or my kids, I would have hit him there. I didn't give a fuck. So, but stuff like that doesn't affect me. He could tell me all the shit he wants. But after the fight, he was cool, man. We talked in the backstage. Me and James Gallagher were talking in the backstage. He was a cool guy, and you know, he was respectful after.
Well, that's great to hear, because, you know, once the fight's over, that's just the competition. You know, the competition in this sport is unlike other sports, because basically someone has to get their ass kicked, I guess, in a way. You know, in other sports, we look and there's a score that says, well, they were better this night, you know. But that's great to hear that he was that way. I think that SBG team just likes to talk it up, you know, and that's their style. But I'll tell you what, it also draws people in. So maybe there was some benefit to it as well.
Yeah, yeah, of course. It was not just him during the press conference. Even in the hotel room, he was poking me a lot, and I was just smiling at him. And you know, at the end of the day, we go in there, we fight, and we try to kill each other, but it's also entertainment sports. So yeah, it was good.
Georgia, you've seen a lot in your career, and you've seen a lot of different types of fighters. When you saw him try and do those things, did it tell you something about him? Did it almost seem like an insecurity? How did that register in your mind?
It kind of did. I was like, man, he's probably the closer he gets to the fight, the more he realizes he's fighting someone like me. And I still feel like people that look me up, they still think I'm like the old Georgie. You know, I feel like he was saying he's watching all these military movies. It was telling me that he's getting ready for war. And I thought it's going to be war too, because his past fight with Charlie Leroy was a, you know, standout fight. He's very aggressive, comes forward. I never thought he's going to try to wrestle me or try to push me around or try to get me tired. But, you know, he kind of gave out his... I think I have the experience just to figure out right away. He kind of gave out his cards. And even after weigh-ins, when he shook my hand and during the face-off, right before we started fighting, I could tell, like, I have his number.
So going forward from here, I know you want to get right back in there. You want a ranked opponent. What would you say is your drive right now? Because you mentioned kind of like a different Georgie Karakhanian. Is it the belt? Is it money? What is it that drives you right now?
My performance in there, just on the belt, of course. I want to go out there and fight the top guys. And like I said, I feel great at this weight, 155. Should have done this a long time ago. A lot of guys, they get old. They're trying to cut more weight. But, man, this is awesome for me. You know, like, I'm going to go train right now. Literally, I'm going to go help one of my teammates. But, I mean, I feel good. I also changed some things, like in the diet. I've been in a carnivore for about 9 months. So shout out to Sean Baker. He's the one, like, really got me into it. He's the author of carnivore diet. So I got on a carnivore diet. I cut out all my sugar, my carbs, and I feel great, man. So I just go out there and fight. I have no injuries. I know they have a lot of fights coming up in England, Ireland, Russia. I'm just trying to stay busy, because I'm 36 years old, and I know it's not that much window, and I'm trying to take as much as advantage as I can to fight and get close to that title.
Hey, tell me a little bit about this carnivore diet. What are some of the, I guess, feasts that you've been having? What are some of your favorites?
Oh, my favorite is for sure tomahawk. Tomahawk is my favorite, but I eat lots of ribeyes. And when I started the diet, I was in about maybe 2 to 3 pounds, but right now I'm getting close to 6-7 pounds of meat almost every day. And I feel good. I feel great. And I know I was a vegetarian back in the day. That was one of the worst decisions I probably made. But right now I feel great, man. I just, no inflammation, no nothing. So when I go in the cage too, I could feel that too. Like in the past, I would go in there. It was just, I was stuck. I was thinking too much. I wasn't throwing some of my combos. But right now I go in there, I know what to do. And it just, I don't even, what would I say? I won't even, I go as the fight goes, you know? So, yeah.
Georgie, I know I'm a fat buffoon over here in Vegas, but every once in a while people take me serious. Look, I got a little bit of gray hair, which means I'm older and wiser. Why is it that when I used to pitch a steak to you, you'd be like giving me the Heisman Trophy, you know? And all of a sudden someone else comes along and you're eating ribeyes. I mean, salute to you, though.
That's what I'm saying, man. I did it for like 10 years, and it was one of the worst decisions ever. I thought eating peanut butter and bread and jelly as a vegetarian, man, it was bad. But steak, you know, ever since I started working with Coach Cal back in 2018, he kind of showed me the keto diet, the low carb diet. And then from there, I kind of started like getting into the carnivore, started reading books about carnivore. And then I met Sean Baker. I started working out with him. And this guy is a beast. Like, man, he works out for like 2 hours, and then after he eats about 8 pounds of steak right in front of you. it's crazy. But and you know, I and he was a you know orthopedic surgeon, so I ask him a lot of questions. So you know, I feel great, and my kids are carnivore also. So
my arteries are filling up as we speak. all right. I'm happy for you. This comeback at 55, 3-1. You mentioned Russia, Ireland, England, you know, Mamedov, Nurmagomedov, Quigley. Those are all lightweights, you know, in your division. Is there one that stands out, or maybe is there one that I haven't named that you'd like to fight? And I want to really focus on either the Irish guy, Quigley, or maybe the Russians, because a lot of people don't know. I know that you fly the Armenian flag, but you're also born in Russia. So, you know, there's a few countries that are close to your heart. Them talking about Russia, if they go back, is that a fight card you'd like to be on?
Yeah, of course. I want to get on that card really bad. I know it's end of October. It's in Moscow. That's where I was born. So I would love to go there. I have a very, very big fan base out there. When I was fighting back with ACB, there was a lot of fans. So I would like to get on that card, but going back to the fighters, if Peter Quigley doesn't fight Patricky, I would like that matchup. I would also like to match up with Patricky. I think me and him match up really good. If Adam Piccolotti maybe doesn't have opponent, I would like to fight. There's a kid, he's not ranked, but I mean, this kid, his name is Alfie Davis. He's talking so much shit. I mean, he's sending me messages on Instagram and just being very disrespectful. So, I think that'll be really easy matchup. I'll just choke him out probably first round too. But yeah, if any of those Russians, they don't have opponents, I'm down. I think my goal is the belt, so nothing affects me. You know, if I have to fight a fellow Russian, I'll fight a fellow Russian. But like I said, I'm here to get close to the belt and get the belt.
Hey, man, you've gotten down against some of the top American wrestlers, and a national champion in Jenkins, and Palmer was an All-American. So that definitely ain't going to scare anybody. You know, it ain't going to scare Georgie Karakanyan, that's for sure. But no, actually, all those matches sound good to me.
I'm happy for Bubba, man. Bubba is doing really good. He's doing really good in PFL. He found his groove, and he's using his wrestling to his advantage, almost like Aaron Pico. You know, Aaron Pico found that groove, was using his wrestling, so I'm happy for Bubba.
Are you still living up in the mountains, or did you relocate?
Yeah, I still have the house there. I go over there. We were planning to sell and move out of Cali, but you know, California is a place I want to be. I don't want to leave this place. I still have a spot close to Lake Arrowhead, so I still go up there.
Nice. All right. And then Original Grappler, let's talk about that a little bit. The gym, how's that going?
Yeah, that's going good. I opened up the Original Grappler Training Center February of this year. So it's going good. The kids' class is building up. We have a kickboxing class. But mainly right now, the focus on the kids. So today I'm going to go teach at 4 o'clock. I'm going to go teach the kids' class. So we focused on the kids. I'm going to take them to the tournaments and, you know, build future champions because, like I always said, it's fine. It's not something I'm not always going to be able to do, but I want to have my foot in the fight and always, is if it's giving it back by teaching or just building the next, you know, great fighter.
Georgie, what is it like to instill some confidence in a young kid, whether they're getting bullied or they just lacked it, or they maybe they weren't athletic, but now you insert some skills in them and now they start showing up. Maybe at first they were shy and now they're the first ones in the door. What's that been like for you? Kind of like, I guess, spiritually, you know, not like, or just good for your mind, good for the soul. What's that experience like?
It feels good. It feels good because, I know what you're talking about, and I had a few of them in the class, and it just with the kids, I'm very upfront with them. I tell them, listen, when you come here, I need to be focused. We're gonna train hard. We're gonna push each other, and we're gonna be good training partners. And you could tell from the way we push each other. I think jiu-jitsu gives so much back to the kids, especially. I have few that have, you know, some of them have like maybe mom or not stepdad or a dad and a stepmom. So I have so many conversations with them and you could tell when they get the submission or even when they get tapped, when they come back, they keep training harder and harder. You could tell when they step on that mat, that confidence, they're not the same kid that came maybe 2-3 weeks ago. And, you know, I feel like, kids these days are getting comfortable with video games and iPads and stuff like that. And I have so many conversations like that with the kids before the class and after the class that, you know, maybe leave your iPad 2 hours before you come to the class. Don't look at it. And, you know, those little things help them. And I see a difference. And to me as a, when I go in there, I'm not a fighter. When I go in there, I'm a coach, because I tell them, fighters need to be selfish. Fighters need to focus on themselves. So when I go in there, I'm a coach and I give them all the focus. And I feel like when you look at a kid from the side, you could tell them grow and grow. And I feel good by teaching and giving it back.
That's awesome, man. You're doing an outstanding thing. We can't change the world, but at least where your gym is, you're changing some kids' lives. You know, so many of them are worried, like you said, about video games or their next meal. We have obesity problems. Social media likes, they're consumed in it, and you're taking them away and you're teaching them something. And who knows, maybe one of them will follow in your footsteps. I'm sure a lot of them were tuning in on Saturday. You're probably going to get a great reception today.
Yeah. A lot of the kids came by to the fight, and they're messaging me. And yeah, you know, just like you said, giving it back to the kids, it feels awesome. Also, two of my daughters are in the class, so it feels good to be spending some time with them. So it's good.
Hey, man, it's been a blast. We've been covering you for over a dozen years, and your journey's been a lot of fun. A lot of, you know, ups and downs, just like any MMA career out there. Yep. But way more ups than downs. And right now you're on an incredible ride, you know, in that lightweight division. So thanks for giving us some time today.
No,
and can't wait for the next one.
No, thank you.
All right. We'll talk soon, Georgie. Take care. All right, folks, there you have it. Bellator lightweight Georgie Karakanyan in the house. Remember him, Ghost, in those early Bellator days, back in the days of Joe Warren and Ben Askren, Eddie Alvarez. I mean, Georgie was one of those original. He's an OG, original grappler. He's an original gangster for Bellator. Definitely part of the Bjorn Rebney era.
For sure, yeah. I remember.
Yeah. All right, folks. Listen, we tried to touch on most of the big news that was out there. We have a date set for the Grand Prix in the light heavyweight division for Bellator. Chandler versus Gaethje is verbally agreed to. Burns is trying to hustle down Nate Diaz. But you can always go to MMA Junkie and check out the latest news there. The team works so hard to produce news. What seems like every 15 minutes, we're blasting something on social media or our website. So go to our website and check out the links to our Twitter handle, Instagram, YouTube channel, Facebook. There's many different ways which you can consume our stories, you know. And I tell you this because when I worked in corporate America, there were times where if you went to ESPN, it was blocked. You just couldn't do it. Now, I guess you can do it through your phone now. But a lot of times, if you worked and social media was a component of your job, then you could go to that Facebook page and, you know, kind of keep up with some of them stories on your break, on your 15-minute break. But that's why I tell you that. Check out the YouTube channel, especially where you can see a lot of these interviews, like the one we have with Georgie Karakanyan. It's youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. Lastly, let me leave you with this. We are hosting a watch-along on Saturday for UFC 265. Ciryl Gane and Derek Lewis for the interim heavyweight title. That's your main event. Jose Aldo back as well. He's fighting Pedro Munhoz. He's on the card. Unfortunately, Amanda Nunes is off that card. She will not be defending against Juliana Pena. I'm sure they'll be rebooked at a later time. But we'll definitely be with you on Saturday. More than likely, it's going to be a 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. start time. Although Goz and I are known to dip in early because we love doing these, and that's probably exactly what we'll be doing on Saturday. More on that on Thursday. For now, we'll leave you with that. Thank you for your time today. Go out there and be a champion.